Hey, this is Steve Wilson, the man behind the monster Congo Kong, former Impact Wrestling superstar, and you are listening to the Wrestle Horror Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, didn't I just see you?
Yeah, not too long ago, it seems like.
And not only did I just see you, but I just saw our special guest who was on another podcast with us just an hour. Well, actually, we finished up about, 20 minutes ago?
About 20 minutes ago, yeah.
I would like to introduce the man behind the monster, Congo Kong, Steve Wilson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me again tonight.
I reached out to you because, you know, the whole Wrestle Horror concept and Congo Kong being the way he is. And for those of you that are watching, you can see him right behind me, strangling me. But how did Kong come to be? I mean, that's the one question that maybe some people want to know, and I do for sure.
Okay. It started off, I was actually wrestling for a guy in Michigan by the name of Phil Monahan, and he said, well, I really don't have anything for Osiris on my shows. I feel like Osiris is kind of dull and boring, but I got this idea, and it's kind of a mix between Kamala and Umaga. He's like, you can make it your own, but, you know, I just want you to come up with something, you know, different than what you're doing. And I was like, all right, whatever. Long as it pays more, I don't care. And so I did that, you know, for a couple, I'd say about a year and a half, and I ran as Shomari, still while doing the Osiris character. Then I got a booking in Chicago for a group called Elite Pro Wrestling. And they had ties with the Insane Clown Posse, you know, and Juggalo Championship Wrestling. So they presented the idea of me coming into JCW one night while they were all hanging around, I guess. And they booked me, and I show up, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to be Osiris, and I know that they want me to paint my face because, you know, they thought that was cool. And they said, hey, since you have this tattoo, why don't you paint your face, you know, to kind of match the tattoo? And I said, okay, no problem. And I show up, and we're going through the show. We're going through the matches and stuff before the show. And they are calling, they're telling everybody what they're going to do. And I'm kind of looking around like I know everybody, I'm familiar with everybody. And then they announced this four-way tag match. And they say at the end of the four-way tag match, Congo Kong is going to come out and destroy everybody. And so I'm looking around, and I'm like, who's Congo Kong? I know everybody else. who's this Congo Kong? Maybe he's not here yet. And then finally the guy looks over at me. He goes, oh, that's your new name, by the way. You're more than welcome to use it wherever. And I go, okay, all right. I guess I'm Congo Kong. Great. Last thing I wanted to do was be somebody else, but whatever. Okay. So basically, I kind of married the Shomari character to my own, you know, thoughts of what that character should be, I guess. And, you know, kind of did my thing from there.
Right on. Okay. You know, speaking of the Kong character, I first saw you on I saw Kong, excuse me, on Impact Wrestling. And you were in a program with abyss as to who is the monster of Impact. And it really fascinated me because, I mean, to me, it's like, where did this guy come from? And why is he beating up Abyss? Because let's face it, the way they booked it, I mean, you were really, you got the upper hand quite a bit on him.
Yeah, I think it was a situation where Abyss kind of wanted to fade into the background, mm-hmm. and they kind of needed a monster character to try to replace him. And, you know, so having run into him a couple times on the Independence, he had the idea of me being that guy. And, you know, he said that I deserved a spot and that he was going to do everything he could to make it happen. And he did, you know, I haven't been 18 years in the business at that point. You learn to not believe anything until you see it. But he actually made it happen. And he messaged me one day and he says, I need you to work on getting a ticket to Orlando. And he said, don't worry about your hotel or anything. And he said, I think the company is taking care of your ride from the airport. So you'll have a tryout match probably in front of the wrestlers and the producers. And then you'll, if you pass that, you will have an explosion match. And I said, wow, okay, sounds good. And so that happened and I got there and they realized that they had a wedding to film the next day. And so there wouldn't be time for me to have a match in front of the producers or whatever. So they sent me straight to Explosion. And I wrestled Caleb Conley and went out there and left everything in the ring.
Yes, I remember. And the rest is history, so they say, right?
Yep. The next day I found John Gilbert. They called him Big. And, you know, asked him if he was, I thanked him for allowing me to come in and try out and asked him if everything was all right. He said, absolutely. He said, we want you back in 3 months with a full story. And so, I took a moment and, you know, processed that. And then I walked around the corner and I called my parents and about cried telling them, hey, Ma, I finally made it on TV.
Very cool.
So if I'm not mistaken, Jimmy Jacobs was your mouthpiece for part of that run. Am I right on that?
Yes. I've known Jimmy Jacobs for over 20 years, actually. He was an underage teenager, but his brother wrestled with our group that had trained in Holland, Michigan. Jimmy would work on sound or video or whatever he could do to be around the business. And eventually he, you know, completed his training and, we had even tagged back in the day, it was Osiris, Big Bully, Jimmy Jacobs and Osiris. So he would walk out in his fur coat and, talk all kinds of mad crap. And then I'd have to fight for him. So it was pretty fun. Then, you know, to 20 years later, have that thing come full circle was pretty awesome, you know, and being on TV with him, you know, having that kind of chemistry that we had, you know, based on us working together over the years and basically being broken to the business together. It was pretty awesome.
So overall, how was your experience with Impact? Impact is still one of my favorite promotions to watch. And how was your overall experience with that?
I had fun. I met many people that I probably never would have met otherwise. One of my closest friends to this day is Fala Ba. We came in the same weekend, he and Mario Bacara and we roomed together and, you know, we were inseparable during the time that I was there for the next 2 years. You know, genuinely a great human being, one of the funniest people I'd ever been around. Nothing is ever off limits with him, and he's genuinely funny. We're sitting in the locker room, and I had just arrived. My grandmother had passed, and we buried her that day. And I had just arrived two tapings. And that was the night that I'd wrestled Abyss, actually. And so after the match, I'm like sitting there, and I'm getting a little emotional. You know, I'm thinking about my grandmother, and I'm thinking about, you know, traveling that 1,000 miles and finally, you know, having a match that, you know, I guess kind of defines my career and having to go really well. And I started to tear up, and I say something to the effect of, and now my grandmother can finally watch me, because she had been sick a long time before that. And so out of nowhere, he just pops up and he says, "Yo, she has the app." And I look at him and I want to kill him, but it was so funny. I had no choice but to laugh, you know? So we just died laughing. And then, you know, everybody that was in that vicinity got to be a part of that laugh. And it was a good moment, because there's some dudes that, you know, I'd spent some time with, and I was okay, you know, with that kind of moment happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's always good to relieve a little stress off of it too, off something like that.
Right.
As I say, my parents both passed away, and I had a couple moments like that as well, like early on, to where I had a couple good laughs about it, and it definitely helps.
Right.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there, because back, was it 2019? Yeah, when Impact had Homecoming in Nashville, right at the beginning of January, the day before I went to that, because I drove down to Nashville for the taping or for the pay-per-view, and the day before that, I had just buried my little brother in Florida. And to go to that show and to have that entertainment really took a lot of my grief out and helped me cope with what was going on. Because my little brother was 46 years old.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the last thing I want to do is, you know, much less bury my parents, but I don't want to bury my younger brother.
Absolutely.
But it was a healing process for me when I went to that, just because I enjoy watching the show. I enjoy watching the talent, and it just took me out of everyday life and put me into that bigger than life scenario that is pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I equate it to a ministry, you know, and it's not about doctrine or belief or, you know, anything like that. But it is simply the story of good versus evil, you know, with good most of the time outdoing the evil, you know, good coming out on top in the end. And it's kind of a situation that is meant to minister to people, you know, to help them through their rough times and, you know, their everyday life. You know, I always tell my students, we never know what the fans are dealing with when they go home or what they have to go through in their everyday life. The best we can do is be there for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. So Donnie, I know you had some questions for Steve. Why don't you go ahead and...
Just one is the last time I saw you in person, I talked to you briefly in the back, but it was at War Wrestling over there in Lima with Big Tom and them. Mm-hmm. And you guys did an 8-man that night. It was you and Abyss and Kevin Thorne. And then you had Zach Spades. He come out in the casket as the mystery partner. And so that was a fun night. That was a great crowd and all that. Is there any difference or preference? Would you rather work with Abyss in a tag, or would you rather work against him, or even Kevin Thorne? Even, you know, was it fun to tag with him, or have you ever wrestled against him? Or
yeah, I've done both, and like either way is awesome to me. But I had a blast that night, you know, because just sitting over and babysitting the corner. Like, they didn't let me do much during the beginning. They wanted me to take the hot tag. And I was like, okay,
right,
that's awesome. I'll do that. You know, and neither one of those guys, you know, has an ego or feels like, you know, they have to still shine over anybody or anything like that. And they were completely fun to work with. You know, I love, you know, just hanging out, you know, chilling in the back with them. You know, two completely good guys, and it was a lot of fun. So whether I wrestle them or I wrestle against them, or wrestle with them or against them, you know, they're still two fun guys to get in there with, and I really don't have a preference. Just get me in the ring with them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I did notice on the, like when Zach Spade's come out of the casket and the crowd popped for him, Kevin Thorne kind of broke kayfabe a little bit and he had to turn his back to the crowd and he was either looking at you or Abyss. And he was like, oh my God, they popped it. You know, they popped for him. Me and my wife were sitting right there and I started laughing. She was like, he couldn't keep it in, could he? I was like, nope. that was a pretty good night. They did good. So you're basically doing independence and stuff like that now. And you've also started your wrestling school. Let's talk a little bit about your wrestling school and get that out there for us. So like when everything starts opening back up and you start ramping up your school again, get some people in there for you.
Yeah, I run Professor Kong's Wrestling Academy and it's located in Bluffton, Indiana. It currently has 4 students plus some of the students that I previously trained who come in and help me out now and again. We run Tuesdays and Wednesdays and it's a 2-year program. And I know, you know, these days that seems like a lot where, you know, you'll find a lot of these programs, they just do a set amount of weeks and you're done and it's on to the next. Well, my situation is both to try to accommodate people's budgets better and also to accommodate people's learning curve better, you know, because not everybody learns the same. And I feel like if you just go and throw people out to the wolves, then they run the risk of not realizing their full potential as a professional wrestler. And you sometimes, you know, by doing that, you end up relying on other people to make your students better. And I never want to be that type of trainer. I want to be the full and complete trainer, you know, so to speak.
Right. Very cool. Yeah. So one of the things we like to do with the Wrestle Whore podcast is we're more of we like to get on here and have fun and tell stories, but we're also like a learning podcast. And I always try to like pull a nugget of information from everybody we talk with. And we've had a bunch of different topics for you. I want to talk about like big men, wrestling big men. What piece of advice, or if you have multiple pieces of advice that you could give to the big men out there in the independents and stuff, you know, give them some advice on maybe on telling stories in their matches that they may not have considered or thought of, or just anything you think would be important for a big man match, so to speak.
Well, funny story about that. Matt Anoa'i, or better known as Rosie, God rest his soul. We had a couple of shows that we did together, and a bit of advice that he gave me, but it's weird because I bet against it, I guess, more or less, and it paid off. And not, you know, to discredit him by any stretch of the imagination, it just worked out better me not listening to him in this case. But he told me, he said, with you being a big guy, you need to stay off the top rope and you need to start, you know, standing in the middle of the ring and doing things that big men do. That means not taking bumps and not, you know, not flying around like you're a cruiserweight or something like that. And he says, if Vince ever uses you, then he won't, you know, let you do anything like that. And I said, okay, I appreciate that. I really do. And I understand that. I absolutely get where you're coming from. The problem is if I go out and I do the same things that every other big man does, then why would Vince even notice me?
Good point.
And I don't think he liked me much after that, at least for a while anyway, until we ran into each other later on. Mm-hmm. But I think it ended up working out for me to where, you know, I would go out and do things my way, you know, and I took some of his advice and, you know, I didn't go to the top rope more than once a match, you know, but I wanted to make the things that I did count, you know, and so listening to him and some other people over the years, you know, instead of going out there and wrestling these guys that weigh half your body weight and giving them every big move that you have and allowing them to kick out, it's probably better, not only on their body, on the storytelling, but on your body, to not let them kick out of so many of your big moves. You know, give them one or two big moves, let them kick out of those, and then end them, you know. But you need to learn some more basic things that that you can still tell a good story, still tell that you're the bigger dominant character in this match, and still not give away your size. You know, don't whore out your size. You know, don't go in there, don't take any crazy bumps from them. Learn how to take some of the things that they want to do and figure out ways to get into them that don't diminish your size. You know, like I run into a situation with a lot of guys where we'll go to talk about the match, and I'll ask them, okay, so what type of things do you do? And their first response is, well, nothing I can do to you. And I'm like, okay, well, how do you know? How do you know what I'm willing to do and what, you know, what we can make work or anything like that? You have to keep an open mind. And if you don't keep an open mind about things, then, you know, it's going to make it harder for you. So, you know, if somebody wants to get me to somewhere, somehow, where I need to be seated on the ground, you know, where they would normally do a snap mirror to do that, I don't believe that a smaller guy should be snap mirroring a bigger guy like that. So what I'll do is I'll cut them off. I'll let them go for it. I'll cut them off. I'll body slam them, tell them to move, and I'll miss a leg drop. You know, simple things like that.
Yep, will set it up for them. Yep.
Yeah, it'll help tell a better story, and they still get to do the move that they wanted to do, and you're not being a jerk in the process and not letting them do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very good advice.
Excellent advice, actually.
So you got the school, and you're doing your independent stuff and keeping busy on that. What kind of stuff are you seeing out there on the shows with all the COVID regulations? I know people have probably talked about these COVID on the wrestling shows till they're blue in the face, but you know, everybody has a different story, it seems like. So what's kind of things that you're seeing out there? For the most part, everybody's playing by the rules and doing what they're supposed to do and all that, and the fans are still enjoying themselves.
Yeah, for the most part. You know, if I'm indoors, I'll wear my mask to the ring, and then wear it from the ring. You know, people are generally distanced pretty well unless they came with a group. You know, and really, I guess, you know, it's their choice of how they do things. I just prefer them to be further away from the ring. You know, whether you're wearing your mask or not, you know, that's on you. You're a grown person. I wish you would wear it, you know, because right. Then, you know, it shows me that you're looking out for other people as well as yourself, but you know, you can't make everyone do right. You know, I, over this past summer, I swear I've never wrestled in so many backyards, than I have then. And you know, that was fun. It was different. You know, Greg Valentine once wrestled at somebody's backyard promotion, and he cut a promo about it, and he says, everything in wrestling comes full circle. He's like, I sold out Madison Square Garden, and now I'm selling out the backyard. And I mean, it wasn't necessarily a backyard promotion that I was working for. It was just right. What we had to work with, you know, yeah. And it was a way to keep our fans engaged and keep them coming. You know, that way you don't lose out on any fans, and you know, your fans don't lose out on what they love to see you do.
Right. Yeah. If you have to keep it outdoors, you got to find somewhere to put it.
Yeah.
So one thing I've noticed, you know, and it varies from, you know, you've mentioned a lot of promotions where people aren't wearing masks, but you know, you're protecting yourself. Yeah. I'm fortunate to say that the local promotion that I go to see, which is Future Great Wrestling, they are completely committed to social distancing and protection, and you can't go in without the temperature check and a mask on, and you can't remove the mask for the show. So I appreciate that, because you're still, you know, people want to get out and they want to go do things. They want to go watch wrestling, and it's hard with all the restrictions, but
they managed to make it work, and it's a small sacrifice just to wear a mask for a couple of hours.
Yeah, I don't understand people's argument with it. You know, I see these videos on YouTube. I love watching YouTube, where I believe they refer to them as Karens.
Yes.
We'll talk about not wearing their mask and not breathing in their own junk and whatever. And I'm like, well, and she's like, there's evidence to prove, and there's studies shown. And I'm like, okay, so then why do medical professionals do it every day for long shifts? Why is it okay for them to do it, but you can't do it for a little while?
All right. Yep.
But people are selfish. People are all about their freedoms. And at the end of the day, really just don't, excuse me, care for anyone else.
Right.
Yeah, Max said that's the kind of the way I think about it. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I don't 100% agree with the whole, you know, wearing the mask all these times and doing all this and that, but I still do. Every time I go into some place, I always put it on, and it's not to protect myself, it's to protect the other people, you know, to do my part on making sure I don't spread something to them. And, you know, so even though I don't agree with it, I still do it. I just, you know, it's not a big deal in my opinion. It's like, yeah, I think it sucks. I don't want to wear it, but, you know, it's not going to kill me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. And guys like me appreciate it. You know, I'm a type 2 diabetic, and, you know, I'd rather not have to experience that fight, you know, especially if it's not in a situation where I did anything to get myself into that fight.
Right.
Yeah, I'm type 2 diabetic as well. And I actually had COVID, the first week of January, I think it was. Yeah, it was like the 7th. I got it on the 7th. And thankfully, it wasn't that bad on me. I just had a dry cough for a couple of days, and then I felt tired for a couple of days, and that was pretty much all I experienced. But our whole family got it for that week or whatever, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
I got it. I believe I got it anyway, because there was no testing at that point. But I believe I got it at around New Year's last year. And for me, you know, same thing. I had like 2 days worth of fever and tired, you know, for a couple of days. And then I had a persistent cough for a while, and I could still tell that it had an effect on my lungs, you know, because I can't always catch my breath like I used to, or I can't sing like I used to, you know, and I don't want to go through it again. I don't want to deal with, you know, having to experience a different strand of it or what it might do, and, you know, have that issue. You know, I got enough going on.
Right. Yep.
Then also I worry about, you know, passing it on to my parents and stuff like that, you know, and so it's a big risk factor. And it sucks that, you know, we even have to deal with it like that. But, you know, it's just part of what's going on. Man.
Yep. That's where we're at right now.
Be safe than sorry. That's for sure.
Yep.
Me, I'm just glad that you can't catch it over Zoom.
Right.
Well, I don't think masking our faces up on Zoom would be a bad thing either. We are. I mean, we ain't no Chippendales, that's for sure.
Hey, you guys speak for yourself.
I keep threatening to get my red assassin mask out. You know that.
There you go.
No.
But so we're not going to run this long, and I know you're probably tired, and we're running on empty too. But
I'm gonna hit him with the question though. Got to get the
question. Got to do the question before I wrap this up.
Yeah, I say we got a question we ask everybody we interview, and it's no right or wrong answer. It's just a question for fun, put somebody on the spot, and as we like I said, we do it to everybody. The question is: you are the main serial killer character in your own horror film. What is your go-to kill?
Do you mean weapon or
whatever you want? Whatever you can.
However you want to kill somebody.
I'd say if I'm in a horror film, I'd probably just pull their heart out of their chest, or like legit rip their head out, see if their spinal cord comes with it.
Dismemberment.
Yeah. You know, pull their guts out, show them to them. Ew, I'm nasty.
I like the way he thinks.
Well, I mean, he is Congo Kong. He's got to have some kind of nastiness to him like that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. We all have other sides, I guess.
Yep.
See, now I can just picture this. I can picture you ripping somebody's head off with the spine still attached. I mean, just
like in Predator. I
see that in my head.
Like when Predator did it to that guy, right? on the yeah. chain ranch.
Yeah.
Which was pretty awesome, by the way.
So, Steve, how can people find out more about your wrestling school and more about Congo Kong?
Well, if you search for Steve Wilson on Facebook, you can find my personal page. Feel free to hit me up with a message there. I also have the Congo Kong / Osiris page. You can hit that up. There's also the Juggernaut Gear by Osiris page. If you're a young wrestler and you're looking, well, not just young wrestler, but if you're a wrestler looking for, good quality wrestling gear, hit me up there. If you are interested in training to become a wrestler or furthering your training, feel free to hit me up at Professor Kong's Wrestling Academy on Facebook as well. If you want to just get a hold of me otherwise, and I mean, you don't have to go to each individual page for whatever, just get a hold of me and we can discuss whatever. I'm not like a super stickler to anything like that. If you want to get a hold of me on Instagram, it's CongoCyrus78. And on Twitter, it's @RealCongoKong. So yeah, the only thing I asked is that you don't be weird about it. Like, have a purpose when you contact me. You know, I've had situations where, you know, I've had to end relationships early because, you know, people, you know, were weird, for lack of a better term.
Yep, they're out there.
Unfortunately, with the internet comes the weirdness. We just have to filter through it, I guess.
Yeah, well, the weirdness has always been much. There. Just the internet's easier to find them.
Right.
Yeah. Makes it more apparent.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, don't forget to catch Wrestle Horror on all our social media outlets, @WrestleHorror on just about everything, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I think we're talking about doing TikTok soon. I don't know. I mean, I think we're too old for TikTok, but... Yeah.
Nobody wants to see me dance anyway.
Don't forget to check out. Go ahead.
When you say Wrestle Horror, are you saying Wrestle Horror or Wrestle WHORE?
HORROR.
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 Wrestle Horror.
I get that all the time. They're like
the other channel, but I'm just saying, might want to make that, you know, known.
Yeah, I've gotten that before. I'll tell them what the name is, and they're like, "What'd you say?" I'm like, "Wrestle Horror, like horror films," and they're like, "Oh, okay."
Oh.
So, with that being said, I am Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover, and our special guest, the man behind the monster, Steve Wilson, behind the Congo Kong. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. And putting up with actually two recordings tonight. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, thanks for having me again. Like, I appreciate it. I'm sorry it didn't work out previously, but you know, life happens and we're getting better. And that's all you can hope for is every day to keep striving to get better.
Yep.
And hopefully sometime by the end of this year, hopefully things will be back to normal and people can go see wrestling when they want to. And nobody has to wear a mask and everybody will be happy again.
There you go.
That would be so nice.
Yeah. I'm Meat Hook Jim. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets, facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram @WrestleHorror, Twitter @WrestleHorror. On YouTube at the Wrestle Horror Channel. And you can also find us on our website, www.wrestlehorror.com.